Welcome to Media Mavens,
a bi-weekly podcast where we discuss our favorite
or not so favorite
movies, shows, and games.
I'm Pam.
I'm Riley.
Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Media Mavens. My name is Riley. You're hearing me for the first time in a while doing an intro. and I'm here with my co-host Pam.
Hello.
How you doing, Pam?
I'm doing good.
Trying to think. We didn't. We don't have a guest today, mostly because like both of us are kind of a little nervous to ask people to come on the show. So we kind of like put it off, and now we're doing a show on our own.
Combine that with winter making me unwilling to do anything that requires effort.
Yeah, it's so much easier to just like stay under a blanket and pretend that nothing else is going on.
Exactly.
I guess we, so we're going to follow like, going to follow the same kind of format that we usually do where we talk about what we've been doing. We don't have a specific topic, but we have a bunch of questions from our listeners, which again, thank you. You are saving us. but we'll jump right into what we've been up to. So Pam, do you want to start us off?
Sure. I've played a few video games lately, mostly stuff on PC or mobile. One of the things I played was called The Lion Song, and it's something I got on Steam. It's going to be an episodic game, and the first episode was free. And you play a woman, she's like a music student who's sort of a prodigy, and she is trying to write a new, she's trying to compose a new, a new bit of music. And so she goes off to this sort of secluded cottage to try to get inspiration to write. And it's just sort of a adventure game where you select select what she looks at to try to get inspiration. And it was pretty cool. It was really well written, and I'm looking forward to seeing episode 2. Another thing that I've been playing is called Masquerada Songs and Shadows.
I've heard a lot about that particular game.
Yeah, it's a sort of isometric RPG, and the one of the best things for me is that it has basically every voice actor that you've heard of, except for Nolan North and that other guy that's in everything. But everyone else.
Troy Baker?
Yeah, Troy Baker. Jennifer Hale is in it, Matt Mercer, the new Shepard, well, not Shepard, but the new Mass Effect voice. She's in it. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of people. So it's really well voice acted, and the story is really good. It's about this place that sort of seems like Italy, and it's this world of haves and have-nots, and the haves have these masks that they use that allow them to use magic, and there's been sort of this civil war brewing between the two sides for a while, and you're sort of investigating some things that are happening with that, and the story is really good, but the gameplay is just okay. Like, it's quite linear, which I don't generally have a problem with linear, because I'd rather that than open world, but it's sort of like run from point A to point B, and then talking, a lore entry comes up in your journal, and then again, point B to point C. So, yeah, it's like there's some combat, which is sort of on the simpler side, but it's, yeah, it's got a really good story. The game is just sort of you know, not the most interesting gameplay, but I'm near the end of it now, so.
Cool. Yeah. Does it, like, remind you of, like, Transistor at all? Like, that kind of play style? Did you play Transistor at all?
Yeah, I did. Sort of, except it, Transistor was turn-based, right?
Yeah, I think it was.
Like, this, you can press space to pause the combat, and then put in, like, the instructions for each of your party members if you want to. But it's, like, it's quite fast-paced.
So like, you have to, like, Dragon Age kind of? Like, Dragon Age 2? combat? I'm trying to get a feel for.
Yeah, maybe like that. I'm trying to think of something like it's in the style of more of like the CRPGs. So like, I don't know, like the Baldur's Gate and the Diablo.
Oh,
kinda,
okay.
I guess kind of like Diablo kind of combat.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
And then I also played a game called Sarah is Missing, which there was a little article in Kotaku about by Gita Jackson, and it sort of imitates an iPhone. So it's like you found someone's phone and you have to.
Oh, I think I played that game.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
you have to.
Thinking of, yeah.
You have to figure out what happened to them. You sort of talk to the phone. There's like a Siri-like thing on the phone, and it wants you to find Sarah. And so you have to go through like her pictures and her text messages, or emails, the videos on the phone to try and find out what happens. And it's sort of like it's a horror game, kind of.
Cool.
Yeah, it was. I liked it. I found, you know, the end didn't quite pull things off, but it's really neat. I like those kind of voyeuristic type games where like you're going through someone's stuff. So that was good. And then I started Mystic Messenger. I'll probably wait because I know you've been playing a lot of Mystic Messenger.
Oh my
so I'll
God.
Maybe wait and add on to what you have to sure. say about that. But it was kind of weird because I started playing Mystic Messenger immediately after I finished Sarah is Missing. So at the very beginning of the game, when it's like, go through this door, I'm like, I can't go through this door. Someone will murder me. And then it's like, no, I don't think it's that kind of game. Other than that, I've been watching a lot of new TV because I just subscribed to Crave TV, which is, I think, the Bell version of Netflix. So it's got a lot of new stuff to watch on it. I watched 2 seasons of MasterChef Canada, which were good. It's better than the American MasterChef, but not as good as the Australian one. But it was good, and Sarah ruined the last season for me.
I saw that.
Yeah, she's like, hey, this person said the name won a season. Do you know about that? I'm like, yeah, that's the season I'm watching right now. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not super concerned about spoilers, and it was fun to watch and see a whole bunch of chefs from Toronto that I knew.
Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. And then I started actually watching Experience Points.
Yay!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know you had talked about it before, and I had sort of watched an episode or two, and then I used a little clip of it in one of the most recent videos I made on RPGs, but I started sort of watching it earnestly, and I think I'm on episode 7 or 8, and it gets so good. Mm-hmm. I love how... like how nicely edited it is. I mean, I know you've recommended a lot of D&D sort of streams and shows, but like going to one, I'm like, oh, there are 33-hour episodes. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, a little daunting.
Like, yeah, so this is nice because every episode is like maybe 15 or 20 minutes. And I think there are 12 of them. So it's really good. And I like that they have riddles and things in addition to combat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like neat puzzles and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, I love that little series a lot, and I hope that they end up doing more. And then I also hope that they, like, get...
more attention?
Yeah.
That
they, like, you know, get more views and stuff on their channel, because it's really, like, I said it before, I think, in one of the episodes, but it's, like, the amount of work that they did and, like, how well done the whole show is like, the views that they have is not indicative of how good that show is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more people need to watch, because I see they've got, like, 3,000 Twitter followers. Like, watch it, Twitter followers.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to finishing that off sometime, maybe this weekend or this week. And then the last thing is I started reading Where Am I Now?, which is Mara Wilson's sort of biography kind of memoir book where she talks about being a child star. I'm sort of in the middle of it. So I just read the chapter where she talked about her being in Matilda, which was a good chapter. I thought the book started off a little bit rough, like very sort of short little vignettes about what she thought about certain topics, but it's sort of getting better as it goes. She's got a lot of cool things to say, and it's cool to hear about all of those movies because, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire, Melrose Place, Matilda were all things that I watched at some point or another. That's about it for me. What have you been up to?
Well, actually, speaking of Matilda, I went to the show that's in Toronto at the Mirvish Theatre. And it was actually really good. I, like, didn't really know what to expect. The last time we went to a show there, we saw Once, which is, like, kind of a musical about, I think, Irish immigrants that come to New York or something. And, like, there's a couple good songs, but then, like, the everything else was kind of not that good. So I was like, well, if we go to this one, hopefully it'll be better. And it, like, blew it out of the water. Like, the little girl that played Matilda was so, like, so fantastic. And they had these, like, moving sets. And they had a man playing Mrs. Trunchbull. And he was, like, the best part of the show. He was so good. And I think that's still playing until the end of January. So if you live in Toronto and you're looking for a good show to see, go see Matilda.
That sounds good. I'm pretty sure that's been all over the place.
I think so, yeah. And they were supposed to end the show earlier, but then they got an extension because they're doing so well.
Nice.
So yeah, it was really good. Other than that, I jumped back into Heroes of the Storm. when it's been, like, I was looking at my last, like, win loss on the, like, sheets that record that. And the last time that I had played was 5 months ago, which is right around when Overwatch came out.
That would make sense.
I jumped back in there, and I've done at least the 15 of the 30 games. There's two different Nexus challenges. One of them is 15 games, and you get the Genji skin in Overwatch and Zarya and in HOTS, and then you get a portrait for HOTS. And then if you do 15 more games, there's, like, bunch of free heroes, some of them that I already have, but I think there's one that I don't. And then you get a 30-day stim pack as well.
Oh, that's cool.
So I'm a couple games away from finishing that. And, like, going back into HOTS is, like, gosh, I don't know. It's weird because, like, it just seems so much slower compared to Overwatch. Like,
yeah.
I find, you know, Overwatch, you're, like, constantly, like, running around, and your death timers aren't that long. But then, like, in HOTS, you die late in the game. I think it's, like, a minute? Like, I think it's at least a minute.
Yeah, I think so.
Later on. So you're kind of sitting there like, man, this is a long time to be dead.
Yeah, and even at the beginning, it sort of feels like it doesn't really get going until you get to level 10 and get your ultimate.
Yeah, until, like, you can start, like, team fighting and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I played on, I think, all of the new maps. There's one that has, like, a Zerg pen where you stand. It's kind of like the Dragon Knight map where you stand on the 2 points, and then whoever controls the 2 points gets the big objective. So this one, you stand on the 2 points, and then it charges, and the longer it charges, the more Zerg you have, and, like, the more powerful Zerg will come down the lanes.
Okay.
So if you get a fully charged Zerg pen and you manage to keep the other team off of these points, then you get like these giant Zerg dudes who like come in the lines with your minions and like just absolutely demolish everything. So that's a pretty cool map. And the nice thing for you but bad thing for the enemies is that the Zerg will actually like target hero players when they're close instead of
oh, that's cool.
Like buildings and structures and stuff. So like mm-hmm. unlike the minions, the Zerg are actually like kind of dangerous for your character to be around. And they do a lot of damage to heroes, so it's like you gotta be really careful and not charge into them like I did when I was first learning that map. Because I was like, holy shit. But yeah, it's been fun to get back into it. It's like, I haven't seen the same kind of like toxic chat that I did when I stopped playing HOTS, but I don't know if that's because I've been playing like easy quick play matches and like a bunch of AI matches where it's just like easy peasy. Mm-hmm. And I've never done the competitive in HOTS, so I don't really, I have no idea what that scene is like in there.
Yeah, I used to mostly play competitive, but I haven't played that in months either. Probably about the same amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while.
Have you played Sombra and Overwatch? Because it's still uninstalled on my computer.
Yes. I did a couple times. I find that she, like, the way that I want to play her is more like Tracer, where you're going in doing damage, and I guess in Sombra's case, like hacking somebody and then going out. But mm-hmm. she almost doesn't do enough damage to be scary for the other team when you're in there. Like, your main thing is that you would be hacking and shutting somebody down, really. Mm-hmm. So I was playing her like super aggressively and just kept like dying a lot. So I think I need like more time to learn how to play her, because right now I'm not like not like super into her kit. Like, she's right. almost more of like a defense support hero kind of than an offense hero right. to me. So I don't know. Like, it's when you get like a successful hack off, it's good, because you can like stop like a D.Va from putting up her shield, or you can stop like a Bastion from doing basically anything, so like that's good. But like, you got to get like right up in there, so you have to be really careful about where you are, or like somebody will see you and kill you right away, because you can also do invisibility, but as soon as you do anything, or even if you get hit by like bullet spray or something, mm-hmm. you're visible. And if you haven't put down your translocator to get out of there, you're like, you're toast, because your health is right. really small. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I haven't... Oh, yeah, the competitive season just ended in Overwatch. So when the new season starts up, it'll be interesting to see kind of where she fits mm-hmm. in the, like, the kind of meta that's happening. I don't know. I'm like, undecided about her. She's really powerful when she's used by the right person. Mm-hmm. And, like, super annoying when she's played correctly. But I have not been able to do it very well, unfortunately. I just stick with my usual like Pharah or Tracer or something and do that instead. So mm-hmm. yeah.
All right.
And then of course I've been playing Mystic Messenger. And I'm like, I'm trying to think of how many days in I am for this game, because I am at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I want to say like 50 days of playing Mystic Messenger.
So that's like almost 5 playthroughs?
Yeah. Actually, no, that might be wrong. I think I'm at maybe only 4 playthroughs.
Okay.
Because I did the 3 routes you can do in like the casual story. And mm-hmm. then I opened up the deep story, and I'm doing the first like route there. Yeah, it's It's like the bad part is that like all of the chats and everything are like around the clock, so I'm constantly on my phone. One of the nice things about the company that like updates it and does like bug fixes, they will give you like the currency in the game, those hourglasses. To be like, sorry that we like had a bug, so here's a bunch of hourglasses. So I've been like spending hourglasses to call the particular character, the route that I'm on right now, because he picks up at like certain times. And also I love his voice, so it's like I just call him like every conversation that happens, I'm calling him, which is bad, but also whatever. And the current route that I'm on right now, the character is like the businessman guy, Juman. And he like in the casual route, he's like he's A, like super into his cat, like kind of weirdly into his cat. And you learn a little bit about that, about why that is in his route. But his like character goes from like weird like cat dad to like super inappropriate, problematic, like kinky BDSM dad. Like really fast. His route just goes like whoop. It like takes off into this completely other direction that I was not expecting at all. So if you like getting inappropriate phone calls at like 3 a.m., that's the route for you. It's yeah, like my face is like heating up even thinking about it. Oh my God. And then I'm on the last day of his route, so I'll start the new one today.
Which has been your favorite one so far?
In terms of like entertainment value, probably Juman's, this one that I'm on right now. But the very first one that I did was Jaehee's route, and she's the only woman in the group that you can like I guess romance is the best word for it. And her route, it like the way that it was done, and from what I've been told and people that I've been talking to, is it's like as gay as it possibly could be without being like too overtly like this character is a lesbian kind of thing, because I guess that's kind of still not super like accepted in Korea. So they go as far as they can into it as possible without like saying it outright. Like her route like really resonated a lot with me in terms of like where I am in my life right now with like she's got like a shitty boss, she's got a shitty job, and she wants to be doing like something else with her life. So yeah, her route, like I don't know, I think you might be doing that one.
I think if I'm doing any of them, it's probably hers, 'cause I'm not really flirting with anyone. Like, I'm not being nice to anyone, so I'm probably I heard that if I don't have enough hearts with any character, my game will just end. So I'm kind of expecting that to happen, but I think if I do have enough hearts with anyone, it would probably be Jaehee, just 'cause I'm generally nice to her.
She, I don't know, her route is really good.
Although she seems to really like Zen.
Oh yeah. Big time. Yeah, anytime that he puts like a selfie in the chat, she's just like, I'm gonna save this. She just says it. Like, Jay, come on.
Do you learn more about the story as it goes? Because yes. Right now, it was a little, I was just like, oh, you've got this mysterious phone and this mysterious voice led you to this mysterious room. And now you're in this chat room with all these anime boys mm-hmm. and your job is to throw parties. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you learn kind of more about it as you do each route. I would say Jaehee's route, you probably learn the least about the story. And then Zen and Yusung definitely learn a little bit more about the story. I would say Zen's maybe more than Yusung's. And then Jumin, there's been more, definitely more like what's going on kind of behind the scenes that you get from his route. And then I think the one that kind of has like the big reveals and more details is going to be 707's. And that's the last route. That's the one that I'll start today.
There's not one for V?
Not that I know of. But there are two like secret ones. So I'm wondering if maybe his is one of them. I just don't know how you would unlock that. Like, I've seen, so when you say like an answer or something that one of the characters, like that indicates that you are gaining affection with them, you get like little colored hearts. Mm-hmm. And there is a white heart that doesn't correspond to any of the characters right now. So I've been getting a bunch of those and I'm not sure who that's for. So maybe that's for V. But yeah, I'm not sure. And I assume like, once you get those two secrets as well, that would be more story to learn. But yeah, like there's some weird stuff going on,
mm-hmm.
With whoever like this hacker person is. Learned a little bit about who they are in Jumin's root, but not enough to like give them a name. I still don't know their name. All the routes are different enough, too, that it doesn't feel like you're playing the same game over and over again, which is good.
That's good.
Like, Zen's is kind of like this, like, actual, like a romance story, kind of, with some, like, mystery and like, heroics and stuff like that. So that one's really good. Also, he, like, sends you a bunch of selfies all the time. so that's also good. And I watched like a behind the scenes thing of all the voice actors and stuff, and his voice actor is like the cutest person ever. Yeah, and then like Yusung's is a little weird because he's like super hung up on Rika like the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, maybe stop thinking about her and start thinking about me. But it never like it only like for his route, the only time where I was like actually like, oh my god, it's happening was like the very end. So it was like this huge build up to this little moment that was really sweet, but then like it was over. Yeah, I love this stupid game so much. I was saying to Zufi, because she started playing it kind of just after I did. And she's mm-hmm. on the same route that I am now. So, like, every time something happens, I have somebody to, like, yell at. but she was saying, like, the routes in the deep story, the first one that we're playing, she said this is probably the first one where she'll go back and try mm-hmm. and, like, get all the other endings. Because I guess for each character, there's a good ending, a bad ending, and, like, a middle ending.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, this is probably the first character where I feel like I should go back and do more. So it's kind of cool. And I haven't really, like, made any use of the save and load features where, like, you know, save before a branch in the game and then you can do both. But I haven't done that yet, which would probably be smart so I don't have to play, like, all 11 days of the route again.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Although,
don't you also have to use hourglasses to load the game?
No.
No? Oh, no, okay. No.
I think that was in there at one point. Oh, wait. Actually, yeah, you might be right. Loading from a save slot, yes. I think that might be right. Because at one point there was a bug where people could load up the game and like farm hourglasses and then load up from that same point again and farm hourglasses, and then so they were having people like exploiting the system before they fixed it. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, I just love it so much. And I should probably play something else, to be honest. But it's good. And like, I really like the fact that all the characters are voice acted, and like the phone calls you get are voice acted, and some of the visual novels have voice acting over it. So it's like high production quality for a phone game.
Yeah, it is.
You know, compared to like, I don't know. I guess like the other phone game that I've played is Lifeline, really. But like, how are you going to voice that when the person's in space? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And then apart from Mystic Messenger, I started watching Yuri on Ice, which... I've
been hearing a lot of that
too. Yeah, yeah. So I saw people talking about it, and they're like, it's like a skating anime. And it kind of like caught my interest, A, because so many people were talking about it and talking about how good it was. And when I was younger, my mom and I used to go to like skating events and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we like I would go. She took me once to not Skate Canada. I can't remember what it was. It was in the like Kitchener, like in the mm-hmm. bigger city close to where I lived. And we went and like we would watch like the skaters warm up, and like I have an envelope somewhere that is full of autographs from Canadian skaters. Like I have Elvis Stoiko's autograph. Cool. I have I think I have Patrick Chan's autograph, and I have, oh gosh, I can't remember them now, but there was a really famous like pairs skater duo.
Isabel and Lloyd? No.
Maybe. Gosh, I can't remember their names now. And so like I was immediately like, oh, perfect skating anime. Like that is up my alley so much. The animation in the show is really cool, because what it looks like they've done is like they've done rotoscoping over like an actual like recording of somebody skating. And
what's rotoscoping?
So it's from what I understand, it's like drawing over, so it's like a pre-recorded thing of like kind of like motion capture.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have like a video of somebody doing these actions, and then the animator will draw frame by frame over the actions that are happening.
Okay.
And then it'll give it this look, like a natural look, that it's like an actual person doing these movements, but it's been animated. So it's like all the skating in the show has been rotoscoped. Like it's so it like looks like natural and real. And like they included like my favorite ice noise, which is like blades on ice, where like they make like the scraping noise, like that. Mm-hmm. I love that sound so much. So they have like really, really good animation. The characters are so great. And like the story so far is pretty good too. Like it's Yuri has kind of come back to competitive skating, and he's 23, so to him this is like the last time he might be able to do it, because he's quote getting older in the skating world.
So old.
I know. So he's like, this is kind of like his like last hurrah, and he like kind of earned having this other skater, this Russian skater Victor, as his coach. And then their relationship ends up being something much deeper. And this last episode had a Canadian skater for the first time. And they mentioned, mm-hmm. like, he won Skate Canada. And he's, like, going on, like, to the Big Cup or whatever. I can't remember what it's called. But he had, I, like, freaked out because he had a Canadian Tire patch on his jacket. And I was like, he's so Canadian. Look at him.
Did he have Tim Hortons?
No, which I thought he would, but he didn't, because that would be the next big thing that would be really good. And, like, I've noticed, thanks to, like, a bunch of people on Tumblr, that they make references to, like, certain skating events that have happened. So, like, one of the flashbacks into Victor's life is him winning, and then he's wearing, like, a flower crown, and that's, like, modeled after, I think, American skater Johnny Weir. And, like, his costume is, like, exactly the same. He, like, skates off the ice the same way, so they probably use the same footage and then rotoscoped over that. But, like, they were saying that it's, like, a big deal that they picked this particular skater, because Johnny Weir, I guess, he, like, skating in general is, like really political and really kind of, like, grossly homophobic.
Really?
I don't know if it's better now, but it, like, people definitely wear was.
Sparkly body suits.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, I know. And, like, it, like, that's just kind of how it was. I don't know if it is still the same way now, but, like, Johnny in particular, the skater, would have, like, people were saying, you know, he would have had better marks, he would have done better on the rink if he had kept his, like, flamboyant personality, like, off the ice. But because he didn't do that, he didn't always get the best marks, and it was, like, the judges and stuff are, like, extremely biased towards certain people. So they picked this character, this skater, and modeled this character, like, one of the flashbacks in his career, like, after this skater. I thought that was, like, a really, like, kind of, like, a beautiful moment in the show that I don't know if a lot of people caught, if you don't know, like, anything about skating. So I'm happy that I saw that on Tumblr and somebody pointed that out, because, yeah, it's really good. And, like, yeah, the show is just so great, and I want, like, more and more people to watch it because it's so good. And then, continuing on my being stuck in Asian culture and, like, not doing anything else with my life. I've been listening to and watching a ton of K-pop music videos.
Mm-hmm.
I've been into K-pop for a while. And, like, I started watching it, I don't know, like, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, kind of, like, listening to K-pop. But more recently, I've been watching, because I saw them on, you know, the reaction YouTube channels,
mm-hmm.
that are, like, teens react to or whatever.
Yep.
They had K-pop on one of these teens react to K-pop, and I was like, okay, I'll just watch it and see kind of what they think. And then I got introduced to these new K-pop, like, boy bands, I guess is the best word for them over here.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, so I've been watching, like, old recordings of some of their concerts and stuff, and, like, the production value of these concerts is incredible. There's, like, moving platforms and lights, and everybody in the audience has, like, glow sticks that, like, change colors during the show, and there's, like, pyrotechnics and choreography and like, so much, like, dancing. And, like, I haven't been to a lot of concerts in my life, but, like, now I'm thinking I should go to, like, a pop concert, because they're, like, I can't even, like, think about how awesome it is to just watch, like, I don't know. I love it. And I've been seeing it kind of pop up more and more in, like, kind of my regular, like, news circle kind of thing, where one of the groups, BTS, they were in the Calgary Metro.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a professor from the University of Calgary was talking about them, and so they were in there in that. And then I saw an article about Big Bang, and they're like, they've been together for 10 years. And this group is like long running and well established and has like a huge fan base. And they might actually be breaking up this year.
Oh, no.
Because of the North Korea and like South Korea kind of like uneasy relationship. They have like every man in the country has to serve 20 months in the army or something before they turn 32. So some of their members are getting to that age, and so that's why people think they might be breaking up.
Okay.
Which is really shitty. K-pop is like this weird, like, giant industry where they take, like, basically kids at a young age, train them in dancing and singing, and then, like, put them into groups. And then those groups, then, like, they, you know, put them out into the world, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, however they do is, like, their, like, that's their job. But it's, like, it's, I don't know, K-pop is this weird, like, mysterious thing that it's, like, this giant, like, monster kind of where it's really interesting to see that it doesn't translate, like, over here. But, the like, these groups are huge, and they sell out concert venues, and their music videos have, like, over 100 million views. Wow. And their concerts are, like, always sold out in these, like, giant, giant venues. And they're so big and they're so popular. And, like, we barely hear about them over here. So, I don't know. It's, like, I don't know. I love K-pop because, like, even though I don't understand, like, a lot of the lyrics, like, you can find translations easy enough, and a lot of them, like, come with translations now, like, they'll translate it and have that included in the music video, but it's like they, I don't know, just the like the beats and stuff, I just like, I love it so much. And I would like, I could listen to K-pop for like the rest of my life and be happy. So, yeah. I just talked for a long time about K-pop.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's okay. It's very catchy. I mean, even like the, I don't know if this is K-pop, but Mystic Messenger, like, intro theme.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Bouncing around every time the game starts.
Yeah. I find like a lot of the K-pop is like it always has a good, like a good beat to it, and it's usually pretty like upbeat. And like it, even if the song isn't as good, usually the music video might like makes up for it, because the music videos are usually like really bright and colorful, and then in the music videos they have like this incredible choreography. So yeah, if that's like, if that's your thing at all, then I would say check that out. Specifically, I think what I've been looking at lately, BTS and EXO, and that's spelled EXO. But yeah, they're so good, and I love them all so much. Okay, so after my exposition on K-pop and anime, let's get into our Twitter questions for the last bit of the show here. So. The first question comes from Act 1-1, and he asks, after all the build-up in Mass Effect 1, what did you think about Spectres by the end of the first trilogy?
I feel like once it got out of once it was Mass Effect 2 and 3, Spectres were kind of left in the background. Like, it was such a huge part of Mass Effect 1, the fact that Shepard was going to be the first human Spectre, and then I don't even know if it was mentioned in the other games.
I know it gets mentioned in 3 because Caden or Ashley, depending who you save, they become the next human Spectre after you.
Oh, okay.
But that's like kind of the only thing that you hear. And, like, you never... Do you ever, like, meet up with another Spectre? Like,
I don't think so.
Nihilus in one, maybe?
Yeah, I think that was it. Oh, no, yeah, now I do remember in later games, there's, like, that Spectre training zone where you can get special weapons and things.
Like, that was, like, a DLC, right?
Oh, was it a DLC?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, I do feel like they sort of dropped that. Like, being a Spectre didn't really mean a whole lot.
Once you got it.
Yeah, once you got it. It was like, yeah, I accomplished something. And then it was just like, oh, something else came up. Let's go handle this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, overall, I guess it was kind of just like, we became one and that was it. Like, I expected them to be like, you know, an elite, like, hit squad almost. Or we would have seen more of them, like, especially in 2. Like, it seems like you should have seen a lot of them with, like, the collectors going from colony to colony. But for some reason, it's just you.
Yeah.
Kind of doing all the work. But I don't know. Maybe they all died in a mysterious accident and the council just didn't tell us about it.
All right. So the next question is a Dragon Age Inquisition question from Orkchop, who asks, who did you choose for Divine?
I feel like I never got to choose.
Yeah.
Because every time I have played, every single time I have played, Vivian ends up being my divine.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Huh.
No matter what I do. I don't know, like, I think it might have triggered in, like, an earlier conversation or something that I had with her, but, like, even though I want Liliana to be the divine, Vivian somehow, I don't know if I'm, like, too nice to Vivian or if I agree with her too much or what. But, yeah, I've never had a different divine than her.
Oh, she's the only one I haven't had as divine.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, the first time I had Cassandra, who is who I wanted, like, I thought that she would make the best divine. Although I sort of regretted it as soon as I started Trespasser, because she looks ridiculous in like, in that outfit. And I was like, oh my god, I'm so sorry I did this to you. But she is who I wanted for divine the first time. And then the second time, I wanted Liliana, and I got her. Even though I'm pretty sure she's just going to murder everyone. Yeah, but I wasn't quite sure how to get Vivian to be divine, although I don't think I ever, like, specifically backed her for it. Because I found her so, like, conservative, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's weird, too, because, like, I've played, what, mages... and a Templar, and I haven't finished that game yet, so maybe it'll be different. But the other times that I've played, the characters, like, in the beginning when Vivian is, like, she asks you something about the circles, and you can say mages should be free or mages need the structure or whatever, I think I always end up picking, like, what seems like the right option because it's on the right spot in the dialogue wheel. And then I'm like, oh, shit, I picked the wrong one. And then I'm like, I don't want to reload and do that conversation over again. But I think that might be, like, the first part. And then, like, depending on your actions in side quests and stuff and, like, some of the things that come to Skyhold, I think you get points with them too. But, like, I've never, like, I think I looked it up once and I was like, what am I doing wrong? But then, like, no matter what I did, it has never mattered because she just ends up, like, at the very end when, like, everybody's in Skyhold and you're, like, talking to them and she's like, oh, darling, like, I have to go get my fitting done for my gown for the coronation. And I'm like, god damn it.
Yeah, it's hard because it's something that's definitely takes place over the course of the game. So it's not like you can just go back and make a different decision.
Exactly, yeah. God. So no, I never get to choose. I always feel like it's forced upon me. The next question is from X Huggles X. And they ask, How do you handle the backlog of unplayed games? I'm forcing my way through mine so I can finally pack away my Xbox 360. I just ignore the backlog that I have.
Yeah, I was going to say, I look at how many games I have to play, and then I restart some 60-hour game I've already played before.
I start playing Mass Effect again. A full playthrough.
Yeah. When I do try to go on my backlog, I like lists and I like sorting. So, for example, on my Steam backlog, I have it sorted into, like, sort of top priority games versus lower priority games for me. I also use this app called Wunderlist that just allows you to make lists, so I can put up sort of the games I think I want to play the most first, so I can put those on, and then it feels nice when I can tick them off. I have a big backlog of games as well, and I keep just getting new things, so the backlog grows. But I get a lot of satisfaction from finishing things and checking things off lists. So yeah, the list making, and then I also use this site called Groovy where you can track what you're currently playing. And then when I get to move it over from playing to played, I feel good about myself. So
I did a thing. Yay.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, I don't know. Like, I can't imagine putting away my 360. I still use it a lot and buy new games for it, so. The next question is from the Donovan Viper, who asks, what video games would you like to see turned into movies?
Well, the easy answer is, I'd love to see a Mass Effect movie.
I would like to see a Mass Effect world, but, like, it can't have Shepard in it.
No. Yeah, oh, okay, right, good. Exactly. No, okay. It would have to be either, like, before the trilogy or after the trilogy, because, like, there's no way that you could make a Shepard in a movie and be like, this is now the canon Shepard, all of your Shepards, like, don't matter anymore, bye. Like,
yeah,
it would have to be, like, maybe in the universe, and, like, maybe Shepard could be out there somewhere, but they, like, maybe, like, obscurely reference the fact that she's doing something on another planet or something. But yeah, like, something in that universe would be cool, because, like, the Mass Effect technology, and, like, the relays, and, like, even the collector threat would be cool to kind of have in a movie. Like, it reminds me of Serenity, kind of, like Firefly. The collector dudes who are, like, gross and capturing people.
Yeah.
But I mean, for the most part, I think, like, video games should stay video games. Usually the movies end up being, like, kind of like, well, depending on if you like the Resident Evil movies or not, there's an example. Some of them are good, some of them are not good. So, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I thought of a bunch that I thought would be good. What was it? Well, I know they're already doing this, but I think The Last of Us could make a decent movie, just because it's sort of built in a very movie-friendly way, I think. Like, the story is sort of set already, and the characters and everything, so there's no problem with people making different decisions and not relating to the movie. I thought that Shadow of the Colossus could make a good movie, like, if it was an animated movie. Like, sort of
like studio. Iron Giant or something?
Yeah, like the Iron Giant. Something like that would be cool. I would love to see an Overwatch full-length movie.
Yeah. In the same, like, style
as the shorts, ones? Yeah. That would be cool, where you could get to see all the characters and how they all interact together.
That'd be good. Would you have it, like, before the, like, crisis point in the game where they've split up from being...
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. And then the last one is a LucasArts game called The Dig, which is a point-and-click adventure game, but it's written by a bunch of good people, like Orson... It's written by Orson Scott Card, and then Steven Spielberg was even attached to the game, so I think it would make a... it's got a really cool story about this asteroid that sort of appears and this group of astronauts that goes and has to explore it, and then they get teleported to another galaxy. So I think that would be a cool movie.
Yeah. The next question is from Solid Pollywog, and they kind of, it's not really like a question, but they're thinking that, like, what not to remake would be something interesting to talk about. I don't know, they're remaking so many things that I'm like,
I know.
What aren't they remaking?
Yeah, I'm not super against remakes. Like, I don't get upset when people remake things that I like, but I feel there are some things, like, where a particular actor is, like, so much associated with the character they're playing. Like, one of the ones I thought of was David Bowie in The Labyrinth. Like, I can't imagine another Goblin King.
Yeah.
So stuff like that are things that I don't particularly want to see remakes of.
Yeah. Yeah, anything where you need to, like, switch the actor that's been known for a long time. Because, like, you see that character and you're like, well, you might as well just made it a new person, like, a new character.
Yeah. Anything in terms of games?
I mean, remaking games is always, like, when I think of remaking a game, I'm thinking specifically of Final Fantasy VII, since that's the one that I, like, I feel like that I'm the most invested in that.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather that they did something, like, because I think I have a remaster of it. I haven't played it, but I bought it on Steam. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with stuff like that, but I'm not sure if I'm going to like the new one, and I don't want, like, you know, I don't want that feeling of being excited to play Final Fantasy VII and then going into this new, like, what is essentially a new game, and getting in there and being like, wow, this is nothing like I remember, and blah. Like,
yeah,
what I would love, but I know it's probably not possible and it would take forever, is to just, like, redo the entire game, like, structure, bones, like, redo it all in the current, like, gen graphics and on the current platform, and then just keep it exactly the same. And, like, I don't know if they're, I don't think Final Fantasy VII is voice acted. Some of it might be, but, like, they could add so much to it. But then, like, it's such a big game that it would take forever, and then in the place of having people working on that, you would lose out on what could be, like, a brand new game that is just as good and just as impactful, but you're stuck, you know, with the old story that you've already played, and you could have something new instead. So I'm, you know, like, I would love for a new Final Fantasy VII, like, remastered, redone, whatever, but I know that is not really a good wish to have, because I've already played it and I've already had that, like, you know, the emotional, like, experience with that game, and I you know, we gotta keep, like, moving forward and making new stories and trying new things instead of getting stuck remaking things. So
yeah, I think we're kind of are stuck there anyway. But for games, I think it should focus on things that can actually be improved. Like, I don't know, sort of the PS1, N64 generation, even maybe the next generation. Those games look bad now. Like, that was the start of 3D graphics, the start of polygons, and they just look bad. So if people want to remake or remaster games from those generations, I'm usually pretty into it. Whereas a lot, like, the earlier things, like, I think NES, Super Nintendo still looks good. Like, people are
making
pixel art games now again. And then similarly, I don't really like it when teams spend a whole lot of effort remastering, like, a PS3 game to play on PS4 or an Xbox 360 to play on Xbox One. I feel like, I know a lot of people have wanted a Mass Effect remaster, and I'm just like, it looks fine. Like, it's, you're not going to make it that much better. Like, I'd rather those people at BioWare be doing something
new. Yeah.
All right. The next question is from a Latino lawyer who asks, what's your favorite holiday-themed sitcom episode, and why do you think it's limited usually to comedies?
Does The Simpsons count as a sitcom?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, good, because I like their Halloween ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like those, too. A couple of mine that I thought of. One is a comedy and one is not. The first one is The X-Files. There's a Christmas episode called How the Ghost Stole Christmas. And it's I think it's season 5 or 6, and Mulder and Scully go to visit this house, and it's haunted by the ghosts of Lily Tomlin and Ed Asner, and the ghosts make them think that they're trying to kill each other. So it's a pretty cool episode with a nice heartwarming ending. And then the other one is an episode of MASH called Death Takes a Holiday.
Oh.
And it's about, it's got a lot of stuff. It's got Charles, who everyone thinks is a Grinch that doesn't want to give his food package from home to the orphanage, and you find out actually he gives such a charity all the time. He just wants to do it anonymously. And then the big sort of tearjerker thing is a mortally wounded soldier comes in, and Hawkeye and BJ and Margaret spend their Christmas trying to make sure that he doesn't die on Christmas, so that his family doesn't have to think of Christmas that way. So it's very, like, it's a huge tearjerker, but also, like, sort of heartwarming. So that's another really good Christmas episode.
MASH is so good.
I love MASH.
And then why do we think it's limited usually to comedies? I wonder, like, for things like maybe, like, Halloween in particular, I can see how it might be kind of, like, better suited to comedies. I'm trying to think. Pretty sure, now that I think about it, I'm pretty sure there's, like, Supernatural Christmas episodes.
Yeah. I think Christmas is a bigger one.
None of them really, like, stick out in my mind, though. Anyway, I don't know if it's... Maybe I just don't watch enough, like, comedies, to be honest. Because, like, I feel like there are holiday episodes kind of in every show that I've watched.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's because, like, it's a chance for them to kind of get a little more serious without being, like, super, like, stepping out of their genre. Because, like, you know, Christmas for a lot of people is, you know, getting together with family and friends and like, being happy. But also, like, maybe they can, like, for comedy shows, you can kind of, like, shoehorn, like, well, somebody's going through a very real thing that they don't talk about normally because it's a comedy show, and then you can kind of, like, approach it that way. So, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the time comedy shows, like, especially sitcoms, have, you know, 24 episodes a season, whereas some more dramatic shows, especially lately on, like, the networks or the... like HBO and stuff, have a lot fewer episodes to work with, so but I do find there are, I mean, especially for Christmas, they sort of appear in both genres.
The next question slash kind of topic to talk about is the Nintendo Switch, and Reetin on Twitter sent that in. I don't know, I mean, Nintendo always does, like, these weird consoles. And, like, I have a Wii U that I played Splatoon on for maybe, like, 3 months, and then it's been collecting dust for the last year or two.
Yeah.
I mean, so I probably won't buy it. I mean, it looks cool for like what they showed on like the promotional video. It looks neat. I don't know if I will ever buy one, but it looks cool. So
yeah, I well, if I lived alone, I would not buy one. However, saying that, Will buys everything new and shiny, so I'm sure there will be one in my house when it comes out. But I honestly haven't been interested in anything Nintendo's done since the Wii, which I thought was just a weird console, which I accept, you know, did a lot of great things and got a lot of people into gaming that weren't previously. But I'm a big fan of nice, ergonomic, comfortable controllers, and Nintendo just makes these little tiny things for little child's hands.
See, and people in the video hold them like they're like clawing their fingers around it, like
I mean the idea that you can have it on your TV and on the go is kind of cool. I think that, you know, those controllers, like trying to play on the go with those two little controllers you take off the sides, they look terrible and I wouldn't want to play with them. I also don't necessarily think it'll take the place of the DS, because if you have more than one gamer in your house, you're going to have to fight for it. But I don't know. I'm sure they'll have some decent stuff. I hope they get a little bit more third-party support than they did for the Wii U. There were some decent games on Wii U. Like, I like their platformers. Like, I liked the Mario U, and I liked the Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. But generally, it's just the Nintendo console is my least favorite of the consoles.
Yeah.
The next question is from, I think I broke it. Considering the success of the NES Mini, would a Game Boy or Super Nintendo Mini be a better follow-up?
No.
No?
Like, Game Boy, no. Like, absolutely. Like, especially if you're going to attach, like, the Mini onto the end of it, no.
Oh.
Something like, you might know how small that would be? I don't think so. I mean, like, maybe if they wanted to, like, re-release some of the old Game Boy games and, like, put them on the DS, I think that would be better.
That's exactly what I think. Like, if they made it a 30-game cartridge for the DS, that would be a good idea.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. I don't think they need to release, like, a whole new thing. Like, maybe, like, the SNES Mini might be cool. But, like, I don't know.
Sorry, go ahead.
With the Game Boy one specifically, I think it would be better to put it on the one that's out now. Like, you know, I just, like, don't go back and make an old one that can only do, like, those things. Put it on the new one that you have now. Update those games. Like, that's just what we were talking about, like, remaking games. I don't know. Would you rather, like, if you're a Nintendo fan, would you rather them, like, remake all of those? Like, is the nostalgia that strong?
I don't think so. I'm trying to figure out who the audience for this stuff is, because, like, I'm not. I think it's people who had Nintendos who, like, aren't currently retro gamers, like, who remember their Nintendo but haven't played it in 20 years. Or just, like, collectors who will buy anything that says Nintendo on it. But, like, for me personally, I have a whole bunch of retro games, so I don't really need a whole dedicated console to play games. Although, I would say that considering the success of the NES Mini, like, they may as well make a Super Nintendo Mini. I mean, I think that would be a good idea. That actually would be better for me than the Nintendo, since I sort of missed out on the Super Nintendo. But yeah, I totally agree. Game Boy, no. Like, first of all, making it a mini version would be terrible. Like, oh my god, I can only imagine those buttons. Like, I'm already mad at Nintendo's little D-pads and things. And also, I think it would be, from a manufacturing point of view, a lot harder, because the NES Mini, like, is super flimsy. Like, it's this light little piece of plastic, which is fine if it's just going to sit on a shelf. But if you have a Game Boy that you're going to need to carry around with you, and you're going to need to, I guess, charge it probably in order to carry it around with you, it's going to need to be built a lot more stably, and it'll, I think the cost would go quite considerably up from the NES. So,
Just doesn't seem like a worthwhile, that one in particular doesn't seem like it'd be worthwhile to do.
Yep.
The next question looks forward into the future a little bit. From Super Nintendad, I like that name. Which 2017 game and which 2017 movie are you looking forward to the most?
Game is Planescape Tides of Numenera, which should be out, I think it's March maybe they're planning. It's the sort of spiritual successor to my favorite game, Planescape Torment. So it's a isometric CRPG. And then for movie, Wonder Woman looks pretty cool.
Oh, I hope it's so good. I so hope it's gonna be good.
Yeah. And then is episode 8 coming out next year? The end of next year?
Yeah.
So probably those two.
Yeah, how about you? I kind of have the same opinion, like movie wise. I want Wonder Woman to be good. Like, I just want it to be good. And then, of course, like Star Wars. And then, I guess, when does the Beauty and the Beast movie come out? Next year, too?
I think that's next year.
Or is that Christmas?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know. Yeah, definitely Star Wars was the one that I was thinking of, for sure. And then a game, I don't know, continuing my trend of being Bioware trash. I need Andromeda in my life right now. And like, as much as they, you know, as game companies say they're on track for release dates, I'm sure, like, I feel like it won't be out in March. So it's a little further into the year then to wait. But I, like, I need more Mass Effect universe. I need it. That's definitely the one that I'm looking into the most. So,
yeah, I probably should have said that too. I totally forgot, even though we just talked about it last time, and we've mentioned Mass Effect like 12 times already on this podcast. Okay, our next question is from Musty Hobbit, who asks, when approaching an unknown TV series or movie, what are the main factors that get you to watch it, and what makes you turn it off?
Definitely recommendations from friends. If they say something is good, or that, you know, I might like this particular movie, then, you know, generally I will trust them to recommend something that I would like. I think, like, in terms of visuals, I like a lot of different styles. Like, animation is good, CG is good, but as long as it's done well, like, it's hard even to go back and watch like older animated movies, because they look like, even if they were done well at the time, they just look so different from what we see now. But, like, good animation is always good. Good, like, dialogue, that's a big plus. Good characters, like, likable characters. 'Cause even if somebody is, like, the bad guy, they can still be likable and, like, you know, a good villain. As for what would make me turn something off, like, if it's boring or like ends up being super sexist or racist, that gets turned off pretty much immediately. Like, anything that kind of like makes me eye roll at something that the characters say, then I'm like, okay, I don't know if I can sit through this, and I'll turn it off.
Yeah, when I see new things, I do like to see sort of a diversity of characters. Like if I turn on something and 7 of the 8 main characters are white guys, then I'm just like, I've probably seen this before.
Yeah.
I like anything sort of sci-fi or anything about space, anything about the end of the world. Those will generally get me to take a look. As far as what'll turn me off, well, a lot of things will turn me off, but I can't say that I actually turn off a lot of things. Like, it's very rare that I'll put on a movie and then not finish it, even if I hate it. Like, I'll generally finish
it. That completionist mindset.
Yeah, even with television shows. Like, there's a lot of TV shows that I will hate watch.
That's like, different than, like, thinking it's shitty, I think.
Hate I watching guess so.
It's like a different, I don't know.
I'm just thinking of like things that'll turn me off are, you know, anything that sort of has like rape or violence as just like background activity or something meant to show like, oh, this is the bad character.
Oh, yeah.
Any kind of just, I mean, I'm fine with violence because, you know, a lot of the shows I have I watch are pretty violent. But when it gets to the point where it's like you don't even care what's happening to these characters and it's just showing it for violence sake, then I just sort of lose interest.
Our last question comes from Devoted Pupa. So many people have these interesting Twitter names. I love them. And their question is, what guest made you the most nervous to invite and what would be your dream guest?
In terms of people I've invited, I haven't, like, it's not that I was nervous to invite them. I was just like, I don't know. I find it hard to start conversations with people I don't know super well. So no one's made me particularly nervous. And then dream guest? Well, I'd love to have Jennifer Hale. I would love to have, what's her name? I think it's Frida Wolf.
Yeah.
The new Mass Effect voice actress. I think I mentioned this on an earlier show, but the creators of Planescape Torment, my favorite game, so people from Obsidian, I'd like to have on the show. How about you?
When I invited Adam Koval onto our show, I wrote and rewrote the email to him, like, I don't know, a lot. Even though, like, we had kind of been, like, chatting on Twitter and on his Twitch channel, so, like, he kind of already knew who I was, but, like, yeah, that was definitely the most nervous I felt. As for somebody I'd like to have on, I think we talked about having Laura Bailey on as well.
Oh, yeah.
She'd be cool. Because then, like, I'd like to talk to her about, like, D&D and stuff. And then we could also talk about, like, her other games, like Saints Row for sure. I'd love to talk to somebody about Overwatch. I don't even know who, but maybe, like, I feel like getting Kaplan on would be, that's, like, too big. like maybe having like somebody on their story team. I would love to talk to them about what the hell is going on with their story. Yeah, anybody from the Overwatch team would probably be good actually, because there's so much going on, like visually, story wise. Any of their voice actors would be cool to talk to, especially with their like kind of mini explosion after BlizzCon with that video that Lucio's voice actor Johnny Cruz put up. He'd be cool to have on. I mean, there's so many people, but it's like a lot of the guests that I can think of that would be like a dream guest. It would be like, you know, there are people like that kind of that we were talking about, but it's like, would we ever get them on the show? I don't know, but it's kind of cool to think about.
Yeah. Actually, I've thought of more now. Basically, everyone who works at Waypoint, like Austin Walker, Patrick Klepek, Danielle Riendo, all of them are very smart and entertaining people.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd be cool to talk to, too. Yeah, and then you want, like, nerves for asking people? Those people I would be incredibly nervous about inviting onto the show. So, there you go.
Yep.
All right. That's the end of our questions from Twitter. Thank you, everybody, for sending in questions. It really helps us out a lot. We really appreciate it.
We don't have to think of topics or guests when this happens.
It's perfect. You guys are you're doing the show for us. All right. So as for where you can contact us, Pam, do you want to let people know where you are?
Yep. I'm on Twitter at @Josila_ or on YouTube at Cannot Be Tamed. I also wrote a blog post at my blog, cannotbetamed.com, for the first time in months. It was mostly just ranting, but also maybe some helpful tips for people. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kaleri with an underscore. It's K-A-L-E-R-I with an underscore. And you can also find me at Forge at forge.gg/Kaleri with an underscore. Same as my Twitter is basically anything on the internet for me. And then, of course, as always, if you've got any feedback, questions, people, or topics you'd like to hear on future episodes of the show, you can always reach out to us at mediamavenscast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at @_mediamavens. And if you like the show, please leave us some reviews on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to your podcasts, because it really does help us out. And I know we say this every time, but it's important because podcasts like ours struggle without having those reviews, because that is what gets us more listens and new people who will listen to us. So if you haven't and you like us, I'm going to guilt you into it. if you consider yourself my friend, leave a review on our podcast, and then you'll be an even better friend to me. All right, that's it for this week. We'll see you next time.